last. Age restrictions apply in some states. See pharmacy for details.
This show furnished by NeuroHealth LLC.
You're listening to The Dr. D Show about neuropsychology and well-being.
Get the knowledge you must have to live a powerful, positive life.
The Dr. D Show. Here for you.
Welcome to the Dr. D Show. It is wonderful to have you with us. I am Dr. D Gaines, clinical and forensic neuropsychologist. Happy to bring forward to you the first neuropsychology psychoeducational show on air. Please remember, this show is psychoeducational, which means it is not meant to replace professional mental health advice or therapy. If you do believe that you suffer from a particular disorder, please do reach out to professional help. With that in mind, one of the most important topics that are coming up now, both in the psychology, professional environment, and for many individuals, is the reaction, the psychological state and reactions of individuals after the elections. Interesting articles across the board, both from Democratic and conservative news media describe and talk about what's happening to college students who have been informed of the elections results and their reaction to it. Let's go and take a look at some of those reactions that we find in news media. The Washington Post has the title, "Amid Tense Student Emotions, Educators Struggle with Polarizing Election Outcome. Teachers Have Difficulty Teaching About Deeply Polarizing Presidential Campaign, Have Difficulty Expressing and Rationalizing What the Outcome Means for Society. Emotions Run Really High at Many of the Nation's Schools, with some students arriving to class in tears while others were celebrating the promise of change that comes with Trump's election. Educators sought to channel the energy into lessons on civility, democracy, and American system." Now, that makes sense. However, some colleges definitely increased the their reports of students who are reporting depression, anxiety, who are having difficulty attending exams, who have difficulty following through, basically, with their day-to-day needs through the school. I will say that another phenomena that we're finding is families. Families have a hard time staying connected and function interpersonally. Some families are experiencing polarizing views and therefore have difficulty communicating with each other in a respectful manner that allows them to stay connected. What is really going on? You know, many psychologists and mental health professionals are wondering as to, first of all, why is it that the reaction that we're seeing now to election results is so severe? And secondly, what is it about the results that made individuals feel strong emotional reactions such as depression and anxiety to the point that they cannot actually, or they have difficulty function day to day, and how mental health professionals are going to help individuals across the board with these issues? You know, those are very important and valid questions. And then one question that also showed up, and I would like to also bring awareness to that, is that psychologists themselves have opinions, political stances and opinions about what's going on. And I have spoken to other colleagues who themselves went through strong emotional reactions the day after the election results and had significant difficulty containing how they felt while they were going about their day, treating other individuals who are going through that process. When we face a patient that experiences emotions for a topic that we strongly feel about, we may experience something called, in the professional environment, transference. And sometimes we would experience something called countertransference within the therapeutic relationship, which means that we may identify with the patient, or the patient may identify with us, and that type of transference or experience of sharing a similar experience or feelings, or dealing with a topic that affects both the therapist and the patient, can occur in the therapeutic environment. And in that type of situation, a psychologist or a therapist is a trained one is encouraged to first and foremost detect that that's the type of experiences that are occurring in the room, and secondly be able to get a handle on that situation and use that type of experience in the room towards the therapeutic process, and aid the patient to return to a state where they are focusing on the therapy process that they need to go through, rather than the that type of blurring of experience that can occur, or a shift that can occur in their relationship. So it is very common to have transference or counter-transference issues occurring in the therapeutic environment. What is important is how the therapist handles those situations in the room. So going back to our topic of what individuals are experiencing, many individuals are experiencing after the elections, various kinds of news networks used various kinds of terminologies to describe what students in colleges experience. News, and by the way, news sources now are a whole big issue and can be a troubling issue by itself, in the sense that what makes of a credible news source? We have so many news sources that are not necessarily credible sources. There are sources that used to be considered for individuals credible sources, and then based on how information was shared or lack of information being shared, those news sources became, in the eyes of certain individuals, as non-credible. It is a very, very tricky issue, and I think that as society, we are facing a very big question as to, are we really facing news sources that are credible, or are we hearing an agenda or a political message that comes across through or being pushed through a particular news media? One source, and just to give you a disclaimer, I'm mentioning various sources and their titles and what they're reporting, but I'm not endorsing the credibility of these sources. I'm not endorsing what they're saying, and I'm not making any comments about whether what they're saying is true or not. So it is a possibility that anything that comes on news sources could be incorrect. But for the sake of discussion of what's going on in campuses and with students, I'm going to mention a few more sources that came about. There is a source that's called the Daily Mail, okay? It talks about campus meltdown over President Trump. Students at several colleges start petitions urging professors to cancel classes due to their emotional distress after election results. Petitions for time off at colleges have attracted hundreds of signatures. Top U.S. universities have canceled classrooms following shock election results. Yale economics professor announced he was making an exam optional. Boston public schools have offered counseling to students after elections. And it comes as thousands of professors gather across the country for rallies. Very, very strong emotions. Another one, Detroit News, is sharing with us Students seek safe spaces, dialogue after elections. 1 week after President-elect Donald Trump's unexpected victory, students gathered at Michigan State University's student union to eat pizza, write about how they felt, and talk about what happened. So definitely you could see all these different sources touching on students asking to, you know, students reporting distress, and then leadership tries to find different ways of dealing with that distress. So we're going to talk a little bit about the psychological, potential psychological factors that are at play with this situation. With that in mind, just want to let you know, I am Dr. D. Gaines, clinical and forensic neuropsychologist, giving to you forward the first neuropsychology show on air. You can find out more about my show on KABC.com, weekend show, 8 to 9 p.m. Sundays. You can also find out more about what I do, the drdgaines.com, drdegaines.com. Stay with us. We're going into commercials, coming back, talking more about the psychological factors associated with the recent election results.
Everyone loves free things, and everyone loves gifts, but free things rarely make great gifts. A free ZTE Maven 2 smartphone when you activate eligible service from AT&T GoPhone is an exception. It makes a great gift. Free chips and salsa from Nacho Jimmy's, not so great. A ZTE Maven 2 with the AT&T 4G LTE network, great. A free pamphlet on transcendental enlightenment you got from a weird guy at the airport, not great. So, this holiday season, give the greatest free gift you can give by giving that special someone a free ZTE Maven 2 when you activate eligible service from AT&T GoPhone for $30. Don't give them a free keychain from Big Mo's Muffler or a handful of after-dinner mints. Free? Yes. Gift-worthy? No. So hurry into AT&T for the best free gift of the holiday season.
All plans 12/31/16 online in select locations only. Requires new line of service and minimum $30 payment. 4G LTE not available everywhere. Taxes, fees, coverage, and other restrictions apply. Details at att.com/gophone.
Hello, I'm Mike Lindell, the inventor of MyPillow. And like all of you out there, I had problems sleeping. Pillows would go flat. I would flip-flop all night long. I would wake up with a sore neck, maybe a headache, or feel like I needed a nap even though I slept 8 hours. When I invented MyPillow, I wanted it to where you could move the patented fill to give you the exact support you need as an individual, regardless of sleep position. MyPillow will get you into that deep REM sleep faster, and you will stay there longer. It's not about how much time we spend in bed. It's about how much of that quality sleep we get. I do all of my own manufacturing right here in the United States. I have a 10-year warranty. You can wash and dry MyPillow, and I give you a 60-day money-back guarantee, so you have nothing to lose. And here's my best offer ever. You can buy one of my pillows and get one absolutely free.
Go to MyPillow.com or call 800-324-0629 and use promo code KABC. That's 800-324-0629. Or go to MyPillow.com and use the promo code KABC.
My name is Dale Pazinski. I'm 19 years old, and this is how I live United. I've always been kind of a computer geek, and I found a way to use those skills to help the homeless in my community. For people facing hard times, computer skills and a basic resume are so important. It may seem like a small thing, but it makes a huge difference in people's lives. So with United Way, I created a program where I work with the homeless. Together, we go through their whole job history, write a resume, and then save it on their very own USB drive. We provide workbooks and training certificates. I even budgeted for cupcakes so we can celebrate as a class when one of our people gets a job. That's huge. When somebody says, "Hey man, that job that you helped me apply for, I got it." That's what living United feels like to me. My name is Dale Pazinski. I help people achieve financial independence. So I don't just wear the shirt, I live it.
Give, advocate, volunteer, live United. Go to liveunited.org. Brought to you by United Way and the Ad Council.
You two are the biggest.
I know.
Yentas.
We are, I know. That's our program director came in and dropped off my lunch.
Dropped off snacks.
I know, it's so
like
good.
You guys are seriously like church ladies.
I'm so happy.
Oh, thank you. Oh, yeah, I was just so hungry.
I am so
I had some extra popcorn in my purse, so here.
How dare you, Mike? You're just jelly. You want some popcorn?
Yeah! Popcorn! No, I don't want popcorn. My body's a temple.
11, count to 10.
Dr. Drew. Midday Live. Mike Catherwood. Weekdays, noon to 3 on KABC.
Welcome back to the Dr. D Show, Neuropsychology and Well-Being. This is Dr. D. Gaines, clinical and forensic neuropsychologist, talking today about the psychological factors in play when it comes to reaction of students all over the country and individuals after election results. Now, we have a caller with us. Tom, welcome to the show.
Thank you, doctor. How are you?
Good, good. It's wonderful to have you with us. So we're talking about the topic of elections and the reaction of many individuals after the election results. And what was the question you had in mind?
Well, I have a concern, and I wanted to see what you thought. I feel that in a time when we need more than ever unity to move this country forward for the benefit of everybody, that the amount of, and I'll say it this in the nicest way I can say it, the amount of whining and weakness that I see on the college campuses, I'm concerned about the psychology, the social psychology, of what's developing in terms of the overall way that students, professors are handling, okay, anything that's adverse in their life. You know, life is tough, and I don't understand how this is going to help prepare people, you know, to toughen out the rest of their life by collapsing within our political system that's supposed to be a two-way street. I think it's dangerous to have this type of psychology occurring.
Now, it sounds to me like you have life experience, okay? So I gather you're a bit older than a college student.
Much older.
And when you mention, you know, and this is going to help me probably answer your question, when you mention the difficulty of young students, you know, coping with the situation that's going on, what is it that you're seeing or that you're predicting they're not going to be able to handle based on this type of behavior?
What I'm seeing is that as you go through life and you face your challenges, the victory in life and the journey is to overcome those challenges and rise above it. Okay, I do not think that going into a room to cry, getting hot chocolate, okay, puzzles, coloring books, and Play-Doh is a reasonable response to dealing with your emotions of adjusting to the political system that's supposed to be a democratic system, one win, one loses. That seems like to be a very adverse response to a realistic life situation that you should be able to cope with and work through.
It's very interesting what you're saying, because when we look at psychology and we analyze the way that people develop something we call resilience, okay? How are they resilient in situations of stress and anxiety? We find that, first of all, resilience is a very individual thing. Some people can be going through combat and coming out of it without PTSD. And some individuals can go through a much less stressful experience, maybe one that most individuals would not develop a traumatic reaction to, such as maybe facing, I don't know, their bed full of bugs, who will develop then severe trauma from that and will need to spend a lot of time talking to a trained professional. Now, of course, I was giving sort of like a silly example, but it's really not that silly, because what it means is it shows that resilience, first of all, is an individual thing, and it's everybody reacts differently to situations. But we also know that resilience is something that a person develops over time, and in many of the cases, personal experiences shape who we are, and they refine us and make us, in general, make us more susceptible to being successful at handling stressful situations versus not. Coming, for example, from the business background, Tom, do you have any business background?
Yes, quite a bit.
So here's something I'm going to ask you. I would guesstimate that when a person comes from a business environment, the more obstacles that they go through at the beginning of their career, the more their skill becomes refined, and it sort of prepares them for the more major challenges or more significant challenges that are going to come later on.
Yes, I agree. If you develop the right resilience response to problems you'll face as you build a business career, then what you're doing is you're putting the proper tools in your toolbox, your psychological toolbox, to know the next time what to do to fix it so it doesn't happen again, and to improve and refine, you know, your approach. Going into a corner and crying and playing with a coloring book and Play-Doh does not seem to be, to me, the proper way to have handled or handle the situation and build a resilience path that makes sense. That, to me, is going backwards, and you're taking the tools away. They're not tools you're going to be able to use on the street in life as you go out there and earn a living. That's my complaint.
Well, and I hear your complaint because, in a sense, a good therapy approach to a situation or a helpful approach, it doesn't even have to come to, the level of professional therapy. But a good helping approach to an individual is not only just to recognize what their emotions are, but more importantly is to provide them with first of all, rationalizing the situation. What is real and what is unreal? Okay, is it really a catastrophe or not? We had, for example, we had elections, and there were results for those elections in a democratic process. And now, can we really make statements about what's coming about? Are we going to catastrophize the situation, or are we going to observe and see within the system what is going to occur and trust that our system will allow for a process to take place? That would be, for example, one way where we would assist a person, which is rationalizing the situation and minimizing the sense of catastrophe and fear, which many times is not necessarily accurate. It's not coming from an accurate, realistic place. But the second thing would be to actually give individuals tools to do something about how they feel and to do something about the issues that they feel strong about. So if somebody feels helpless, that you know, one thing did not occur one way or another, they can go and be active in the area that they believe is important. They can use it towards being active in making a change for an area that's important to them. But I also, think that there is a little bit of a challenge that we created with the academic system and within this system of college environment. You know how when people talk about their college years, they talk about, you know, protected time, easy time, time where they had, you know, some people describe it as the easiest or the happiest time of their life when they didn't have any worries. In a sense, they were protected from real life problems. When you, before you go to college, your parents take care of you. During college, you get to be exposed to great ideas or philosophy and you enjoy socializing, but you're really not exposed to real life problems. So you're not really necessarily aware of the some of those real problems that people report about, like economic pressures, difficulty in finding a job, maintaining careers, and then later on building a family, etc. And even some of the, you know, spiritual crises that individuals go through later on in life. And so when people get out of college, they really get exposed to what we would call real life and real life experiences. And I think part of what students go through in college is being sheltered from what the rest of the world might be going through. And this is a generalization, but this is often something that naturally occurs. So, you know, what I would say is definitely both as a professional, as a teacher to students, I would recommend to rationalize the process. Talk about it. What is real and what is unreal? Where are the fears coming from? Are they really justified? What can you do to get active in areas that are important? And actually allow the system to operate, and for individuals who get elected also to have their opportunity, whoever gets elected, to actually serve in the capacity and the role that they were voted for, and see what those results, where these results bring us to. Many, many times individuals get elected to positions, and tell me what you think about this, Tom, but many times individuals get elected to a position and we think they're going to do great and they don't do so well, okay, and we get disappointed, or we have individuals that we don't think are going to do a great job at all, and then eventually they do a great job and they surprise us.
Well, yes, it's exactly where it should be. It should be that. Let it play out. But if you bias the situation and condemn it from the beginning and make it much tougher for the overall success to occur, that might have been the natural momentum of this leader. But if you just make it extremely difficult, causing all kinds of radical problems, okay, you're defeating your own purpose of fixing things. And so I'm just saying that the response that I've seen has not been, like you suggested, a healthy psychological process to work through the stress of the situation and see how things work and then deal with it. I think what was imposed upon it was giving, you know, tools that were completely improper to a group of people, a significant number of people, and using those to respond improperly, making it much more difficult to accomplish the overall good. And I'm very concerned about that degeneration and that particular lack of proper tools. And I think we're dealing with a major issue here. You're right, it's going to have to work its way through. I mean, he's going to be president, and we're going to see how it goes. He may have to work a lot harder because of the dissension that he's facing also. I think he's strong enough to do it. But I'd like to give the guy a chance and see how it works out. I just don't think the right psychology was used by the people who are the leaders of our students, the professors and the staffing at the colleges. I think they approached it from a point of view to coddle them and give them tools that were not proper. And that's the point.
Yeah, and I would say that regardless of political stances and choices, one important thing we shouldn't be doing with individuals is making them feel like victims, making them feel like they you know, that everybody's victimizing them or the system is victimizing them or they're being wronged, because that takes away, you know, that takes away their ability to function in life. And I think that's not a good approach. Tom, I really wanted to thank you so much for your contribution today.
Thank you, Doctor.
That your family is doing very well.
Yes, we're fine. Our man won.
Okay, well, that's good to know that you guys are doing well, and I do wish everyone else to do also very well and focus on unity.
Thank
With that
you
in
time,
mind,
Doctor.
You're welcome. Very, very you're welcome. This is the Dr. D Show. Don't leave town.
You go to the dentist and find out you need a root canal or a periodontist, and that means another appointment with another doctor at another location, maybe in a couple of days or weeks. Well, now there's a much easier and affordable way. Dr. Messer Connie has put together a team of experts at LA Dentists Group, a collaborative dentistry practice, the newest field of dentistry that provides a prosthodontist, periodontist, orthodontist, general cosmetic and sedation dentist, medical doctor, and anesthesiologist all under one roof. For anxious patients, they do safe sedation. They do implants, full mouth restoration, teeth straightening, smile makeovers with porcelain veneers and crowns, all under one roof. LA Dentist Group utilizes a 3D imaging scanner, so they can save you time by pre-planning treatments. They even have their own lab to personally supervise your final restoration. To schedule your appointment with Dr. Messer Connie and LA Dentist Group, call LA 888-95-TEETH, 888-95-TEETH, or ladentistgroup.com.
What happens to the Hollywood stars of yesteryear? That's the question we answer on an unusual edition of Champions of Justice this weekend. Tom Girardi and Jim O'Callaghan talk with Bob Beecher and Nancy Biederman about Hollywood's efforts to save the storied retirement home for aging stars. It's quite a story. Wait till you hear the names of the home's former and current residents. Tune in Champions of Justice, Saturday morning at 11 and Sunday night at 10, here on Talk Radio 790 KABC.
My son Aiden has asthma. Secondhand smoke has triggered his asthma so badly, he ended up in the emergency room and spent multiple nights in intensive care. Now he's on a whole bunch of medications. My tip to you is, don't be shy about telling people not to smoke around your kids.
Half of U.S. kids are exposed to secondhand smoke. If you or someone you know wants help, call 1-800-QUIT-NOW. A message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and CDC.
Hey, you like free stuff, right?
Yeah.
Well, KABC is on a mission to hook you up with tickets to the hottest concerts, comedy shows, movie premieres, theme parks, restaurants, gift cards, cash books, DVDs, hats, t-shirts, fans, Well, pretty much anything that we can get our hands on.
Gimme.
But before, hang on a second, before you can get your hands on these cool prizes, there are a couple of rules.
KABC on-air contests are open to legal U.S. residents age 18 or older at the time of entry who reside in Los Angeles, Orange, San Bernardino, Riverside, or Ventura counties.
Employees of Cumulus Media Holdings Incorporated, its parent company, affiliates, related entities, and subsidiaries, promotional sponsors, prize providers, advertising agencies, other radio stations,
location serving the listening area and immediate family members and household members of all such employees are not eligible to participate.
Listeners may only win once every 30 days. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited. Limit one entry per person unless otherwise stated.
Winners are responsible for all taxes associated with any prize. For prizes valued at over $600 in any calendar year, winners will be issued a 1099 form. No transfer or substitution of prizes.
Prizes may not be redeemed for cash, auctioned, or sold and must be claimed by the winner at the station during normal business hours with valid U.S. ID. Once notified, prizes must be claimed within 30 days and a release signed, or prizes forfeited.
A complete copy of the rules can be obtained at the offices of any radio station owned and or operated by Cumulus Media Holdings Incorporated or by visiting kabc.com/contest-rules.
Welcome back to the Dr. D Show. I am Dr. D Gaines, clinical and forensic neuropsychologist. This is a neuropsychology and well-being, the first show on air in this regard. We are talking today about psychological factors that have to do with the election results, the presidential election results, and individuals' reactions to that issue. And we have a caller online. Welcome to the show.
Hi, how are you doing today?
Good, good. Who am I speaking with?
Hi, my name's Mary.
Hi, Mary. It's nice to have you on the show. How can I help you?
Hi, thank you. You know, Mary, I'm just curious. You know, somebody wins, somebody loses. I've just never seen such poor sportsmanship, you know. It's just like, as President Obama said, we won, get over it. And I just, you know, you just whatever side you're on, I think you have to go with the best of the nation. And I've never seen such anger or people unfriending people or such hostility. And it's mind-boggling to me. As somebody who's voted Republican and a Democrat, you know, I just like, are we going to get over this? Or is this going to get better? Or do you think time will heal?
You have a great question. First of all, you really are describing what's going on right now on social media and internally with families, which is really heartbreaking. You know, relationships are being severed because of, you know, political outcome. And, you know, those were elections where people voted the way that they felt. And so, you know, we have to move on. There is no other way. We have to continue with the leadership that has been voted into the House, whether we like it or not. But, you know, you're asking the question, you know, is it going to get better? Are we going to recover from this and move on? Well, my prediction is that we will. And for several reasons. The first reason is because it's human nature to get very upset about things and then forget about them. You know, we always go for the next hot potato. We always go for the next scandal. We always go for the next worry. People who worry about things always find something to worry about. And so at some point, this is going to be old news, and there's going to be new news that's going to show up. Now, the question is if media sources are going to find the topic of this type of leadership that we're going to have in the House now a concern, and they're going to again express a lot of fear and anxiety through media resources, then no, the likelihood is people are going to continue to be anxious and upset, and we might see more riots in the streets and more upheaval and more people being depressed. So that's the only concern that I have, that I think that there has to be some sense of common sense and responsibility for news media resources to work on unity and bring this country to a better place, bring this country higher to a place where we communicate better, where we have some sense of dignity and respect, and allow for a healthy, respectful conversation to occur. I have friends from both sides of the political stance, and I continue to enjoy conversing with both types of individuals with our two different types of perspectives that are really polarizing each other. But I find that conversation brings us to a better place. I find that, you know, I don't feel that somebody else's opposite point of view is an opportunity for me to get aggressive, but it's more of an opportunity for me to, if I don't agree with that point of view, is to call that person on it, is to open it up and say, hey, how does that make sense to you? What about A, B, and C? Make a conversation. And I find that, you know, also making a conversation allows you to actually make a difference. It actually allows you for the opportunity to maybe change another point of a person's point of view, or make a difference in how opinions go. So I always tell people, whatever it is that you believe in, your best bet is to open a healthy, respectful conversation. Nobody likes to be yelled at. Nobody likes to be insulted. If you insult somebody, they're not going to join your camp. But if you talk nicely to someone, you explain them a point of view, and you challenge them on what's irrational that you believe is irrational in the way that they're thinking, you have a better chance, first of all, at changing their opinion, but also you show that you can converse in a humane way. And I think that we lost a lot of that. Would you agree to that?
I agree, but what if somebody won't even talk to you, that they're that upset? It's just so sad that relationships have broken up, but hopefully more people will take, you know, your point of view. But I just think somebody's got to mend us all, and I don't know, some head of state or something has got to put us in the right direction, because it's really sad. It's like really sad times, and it's just too bad.
I think it's also a telling time. It tells us how people really feel. It tells you how desperate they are, how angry they are, and how polarized people feel. You said, well, what if somebody just doesn't want to talk to you? Like, what do you do? And that's where I feel, again, leadership has the biggest responsibility. You know, it's almost like you have a company that's running, and you might have, you know, lower level employees fighting each other. One says this way, one says that way. Often, or more often than not, you're going to need to have a boss stepping into the picture saying, no, this is how it's going to be. This is how we're going to do it. And then people sort of, you know, lower level individuals in terms of hierarchy tend to augment themselves towards what their leadership was directing them to do. And I feel that the leadership of this country from both sides of the picture need to have a big responsibility to unify our culture and our society. I believe that there's so much more common for individuals in this country than what divides us. I think that many individuals are not racist. I believe that many individuals are not horribly mean and aggressive. I think that most individuals want to be able to get a good paycheck that they can cover their bills. I think that most individuals share common goals, and I think that we need to focus on that.
No, I agree with you, and hopefully, you know, the new leadership will take hold and bring people together, because I think just people really need that, and it's just a sad time. It's a sad commentary, but I appreciate, you know, you're taking the time. I'm glad I called in.
I appreciate you calling in and sharing your thoughts with us, and, you know, bringing this issue forward. And I really hope for your family and everyone around you that there is a lot of connection and love, and that there's going to be recovery from this.
I agree with you, from your lips to God's ears. So that'd be a great thing. All right. Well, thank you very, very much.
Thanks so much, Mary. Thanks for calling in.
All right. Be well. Bye.
Bye. So, you know, this is, and I'm so glad Mary brought this point forward, because that is what a lot of people are feeling, actually, I think, from both sides of the fence. And so, you know, I also think that we don't always have to wait for our leadership to guide us in this direction. But I think that the more people that take responsibility for their own life and how that they function and do things in life, the better it's going to be. You know, I had one person that commented once when I was sharing thoughts about whether people should be cursing or not. Okay, so you're seeing a lot of cursing on social media, a lot of name calling and bullying and some derogatory language. And look, if people sit together in a club and they just had a bunch of drinks and they want to use some foul language, you know, within the context, that's probably makes more sense. But individuals are interacting with strangers on social media and start using profanity, offending people, calling them names. You know, I don't know how individuals feel like they're getting anything done with that besides being aggressive. And what are they actually achieving? And they're probably, what they're doing is they're feeding into their own negative patterns of behavior, thinking that that's something that's healthy for them when it's really not. So I had one person that expressed herself saying, well, I think my daughter, for example, was traumatized from not being able to curse. Okay, that she was raised too proper and she couldn't curse and she was traumatized by that. She had trauma from not cursing. And so I taught my daughter to curse and let her curse as much as she wants and use profanity. And I don't agree with that from a professional perspective. I think it's okay if a person wants to have a few words where they can express their anger and frustration. But we are capable as society, English is a beautiful language, and we are capable of expressing ourselves with an array of words. And there's such a variety of verbal content that can be used to express very specific feelings that a person has, rather than just using, you know, the 2-3 curses every single time that you want to say you're frustrated. It also doesn't really take us anywhere. It really doesn't describe how a person actually feels. And finally, you know, those types of words just offend other people, which make them close their mind to you and makes them irritated. It's hard to take bad words back, and then you don't really achieve anything that you were trying to say. So nobody says that you're a prune when you do that, but you can use a better language to get your points across more effectively. With that in mind, you're listening to the Dr. D Show, Neuropsychology and Well-Being. Be with us after the commercials. We're going to go over some very interesting psychological content. Again, talking about the situation that we've got now after the presidential elections.
In my family, we do a gift swap game for the holidays, and one year there was this epic battle over a robe from thecompanystore.com. Now we all bring gifts from the company store, you know, to ensure a good outcome, but I have to admit, I kind of miss the competition.
Thecompanystore.com has been perfecting the comforts of home for over 100 years, from cozy pajamas and mittens to home decor and more. Visit thecompanystore.com for Cyber Monday deals, November 27th and 28th. Enter the code MONDAY for 25% off your order plus free shipping.
You heard it at the holiday party. A cough. A big, loud, juicy cough. Then Cheryl coughed all over the luncheon. Who else saw that? Apparently no one, because one by one they're a feverish mess. But when it comes your way, you're ready because you got a flu shot at Rite Aid, where they care about you and your health. So while they spend their holiday sniffling at Santa, you'll be tasting every flavor in Grandma's stuffing. Mmm, it's not too late. Shield yourself with a flu shot from Rite Aid. It's free with most insurance and no appointments necessary. Rite Aid, with us, it's personal. Flu vaccines available while supplies last. Age restrictions apply in some states. See pharmacy for details.
Good morning.
McIntyre in the moon.
With Terry Ray Elmer.
Bone to pick with you.
He played this stupid Hillary song so many times. This weekend, I had this song in my head.
Oh, my God.
Can you imagine? I mean, that's worse than Dominic the Italian Christmas Donkey.
No, it's not.
I had the Hillary. Yes, it is.
Hey, jiggity jig. Hey, jiggity jig. It's Dominic the Donkey, jiggity jig. The Italian Christmas Donkey, la, la, la.
McIntyre in the morning.
With Terry Ray Elmer. Mornings at 5 on 790 KABC.
All right. Welcome back to the Dr. D Show. This is Dr. D Gaines, clinical and forensic neuropsychologist. It's wonderful to have you with us. We are talking today about the psychological factors that individuals are expressing, showing what we are observing with our society now after the presidential elections. And we have a caller with us. Welcome to the show.
Hey, how you doing?
Hi, who am I speaking with?
Hi, my name is Ilya.
Elliot?
Ilya.
Ilya, nice having you on air. Ilya, what's on your mind?
You know, I mean, I look at it like this. The media plays a big part in regards to people's perception of, well, and that's kind of my question. Do you feel that the media plays a big part of the media's perception if it's fear or if it's, you know, certain scenarios to where, you know, we're going out and we're protesting? I mean, I look at it like this. Donald Trump fairly won. I mean, he won based on just the matrix of winning. Now, if he's fit for the whole opportunity, this to be seen. But at some sort of respect has to be the fact that the guy went and done something that was, you know, very smart. You know, may not agree with everything his initiatives or what have you, but then I think the media projects this entity of divide, that's which we already have all these different divisions and social ills within our society anyway. But my question is that does the media play, maybe what percentage do you think the media plays into just keep gravitating in? And when I say media, I'm not looking at just terrestrial radio as well as television, but then if you look at social media, every 5 minutes is there's something on it to basically keep it relevant. You know, is it about relevancy? Is it about fear? I mean, what part do they play in regards to calming this whole situation down?
That's a great observation. I think the media plays a significant role, a major role in how they're affecting people and how they're feeling. In fact, we have to think about it that media resources make money by how many people are watching them, okay, or viewing them or reading what they're saying. You know, their popularity, the clicks, the amount of clicks that go into their sites make a difference in how successful they are. And so they're competing. They're competing on ratings. They're competing on our attention as individuals. And so the more sensational they become, the more controversial the title is for what they're writing, the more likely you are to click into it. And so what they're doing and what we're starting to see is that the media is looking for more and more and more juice, and they may be creating more juice. How many times we click into an article, we think it's going to be this sensational, juicy thing, and then we find that, well, really, that wasn't the case. They sort of like took that information that was a mundane information and they sort of tweaked it to make it spicier, and by the time it got to the title, it was somewhat far off from what actually occurred. But part of that is to draw people to click into it. And also, a lot of media resources are now privately funded, created by all sorts of individuals. In fact, what's really frightening is most individuals get their media information from Facebook and Twitter and other social media sites. They're not always just getting it from the television, right? And so, and even the television is right, owned by somebody who's making an income from it. But what's important to understand is people get it a lot by social media. And research shows that people go into social media throughout the day, sometimes 100 times, 200 times, 300 times. There is a level of addiction that's going on where people go into social media, clicking on those sources that they like to read to validate how they feel. So what it does, it validates and exacerbates the way that they feel, whatever their fears, their anxieties, and angers are. They get it supported every time by going into those sites. And so there's some level of a psychological addiction that's going on with reading those news that come their way. And there's very little control for individuals on when they say to themselves to stop. How many individuals actually are able to tell themselves, No, I shouldn't be reading further, or I should stop doing this, or I should disconnect right now from social media or Facebook, or I should not be reading this article in front of me. Hardly none of us does that. Most of us just go into it again and again and again, which is exacerbates how we feel. And that's one of the reasons why I feel that after the election results, individuals who voted for or believed in the team that lost experienced almost a sense of withdrawal. It's almost like they were not receiving any more the drug, so-called, that they were receiving.
It's a poor sportsmanship.
Yes.
It's a poor sportsmanship attitude. I mean, this still is America, and traditionally we have not seen, you know, this one single party take term 3 consecutive times. So some of this is really math, and some of it is just logistics. But at the same token, you know, if you're trying to join together the unions between Republican and Independent and what have you, then it seemed like, okay, we lost, but how do we come together versus, I mean, they talk about him being a reality star, but also not looking at the fact that, you know, Ronald Reagan was an actor, you know. So I don't know. I mean,
absolutely. And, really, and individuals that go, leaders who go and lecture in high-end places and make a lot of money by entertaining people with their lecture, is that not a level of entertainment? I think that's entertainment, too. I don't think that we have to think about, well, whether somebody was on television or not. But people find all sorts of ways of making money by public appearances. And do we say, okay, well, that person is not credible anymore? I don't know. But I agree with you that it's not good sportsmanship, it's not healthy for Americans, and it doesn't produce unity, And I was saying at the beginning of the show that there is more in common for Americans than not, many ways, for many Americans. Most of us want to make a decent income to support our family. Most of us want to raise our families or our loved one well. Most of us are proud at being Americans. There's a lot of stuff that unites us. I don't think that most individuals in the United States are racist. I think the opposite. I think most people are not racist. But we're not focusing on what's good in this country. We're not focusing on the progress we made. We're focusing, or the problems we really need to deal with. But we're focusing a lot on hatred, which is not healthy for us.
Well, thank you. That was a great response.
Thank you very much for calling in also and bringing this issue forward, because this is, we need to process this as a society, and I really appreciate you bringing this on air. So thanks so much for calling in, and I wish the best for your family and for everyone around you.
All right. Thank you. Happy holidays.
Happy holidays. You know, and I like what the, you know, what our caller brought forward. I want to mention that American Psychological Association posted their survey that revealed that the 2016 presidential election was a source of significant stress for more than half of Americans. So it seems really like a lot of individuals really found it a very stressful experience, the election. And the, you know, APA recommends to do all kinds of things to deal with that stress. Sometimes to disconnect from the sources that cause you stress, such as the ongoing media stream that can increase anxiety and depression. Avoid getting into discussions about elections if you think that it's going to escalate to a conflict and not do any good but actually harm you. Be cognizant of the frequency of which you're discussing elections with friends and family and coworkers. Like if you know you're going to be talking to someone that you can't reason with and it's going to be going south, like, you know, every once in a while we have a family member, maybe they're much older, maybe they're very stubborn, maybe they're not open to hear. And your experience is always that when you talk to that individual, it's going to go south pretty quickly. You know, be intelligent about it. Don't go there in the conversation. You know, keep it to what you know the person can handle, that if you really want to keep the love going with that individual, I don't think it's always going. If it's not going to be conducive, it's not going to take you anywhere. Not a good idea to go there. I also want to mention that, one has to pay attention, and that's my last comment for today. What percent of your day do you spend processing positive ideas, positive thoughts, and progress versus what percent of your day you're focusing on complaining, looking at the negative side of life, pointing at people who are doing things wrong, pointing at the problems in life, etc. Pay attention to what percent of your day you're spending doing negative stuff. And if you're doing 80-90% of your day negative stuff, you're not on the right path. With that in mind, let me know what your thoughts, ideas are. Love to have you callers on air. You can reach out to me and join our weekly newspaper in neuropsychology, well-being, new innovations in research, and some thoughts that we have. You can join us at by clicking to the Healthy Survey on my KABC page. Click on the Healthy Survey, fill it out. It's only very few questions. Give us your email address so we can reach out to you and give you some more great information. You can also find out more about me, drdgaines.com, drdegaines.com. With that in mind, I'm wishing everyone a wonderful upcoming week. Hopefully everyone enjoyed a healthy, beautiful, and full of blessing Thanksgiving with lots of good hopes and wishes for the time to come now and a new period where hopefully we will see many good things happen. Again, wishing everyone lots of well-being, and feel free to contact always the Dr. D Show. Be well.
You're listening to the Dr. D Show about neuropsychology and well-being. Get the knowledge you must have to live a powerful, positive life. The Dr. D Show. Here for you. This show furnished by NeuroHealth LLC. Beep, beep,
beep, beep. You know, one of the things that happens when I'm traveling a lot and I'm